Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 9th episode of the Riding the Pine podcast. I am Trevor Loudon, your host, alongside, as usual, Simon Douglas. And I'd just like to point out to all the Pineheads, thank you for responding to those ads on the backs of the milk cartons that we put out, because we have found Mr. Nick Ashbourne.
He's back
again. He's no longer a missing child found lost somewhere in North Toronto. Anyways, we got a big show for you today. Brett Bone couldn't be with us right now. He's off working somewhere. And I'm sure he's not doing a good job.
Probably not.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, this is a configuration we've never had before, which is exciting. But yeah. That being said, I come into every podcast with a game plan. And normally game plans just kind of slam everything Brett says. So I'm a bit antsy as where I'm going to go with this one.
Yeah,
just
know.
Radio silence from Nick for the whole podcast. Yeah, has nothing to do.
Nothing to do with Brett. All right. So as usual, we're going to present this to you in a couple periods here. First, we're going to talk playoffs. Yes, the MLB playoffs. Orioles take on the who? And go figure, the Giants against the Cardinals.
Shocker.
We got some power rankings. Second quarter, we'll talk about the NHL is back. The former champs fall on the first night. The Avs looked brutal. And why do the fails leaf so epically every time? And then third, we're going to talk about marquee matchups in week 6 of the NFL. Talking about Cowboys, Seattle, Patriots, Bills. And it's a pretty weak week for football.
Yeah, it's not great.
all that plus some segments and a special appearance by, you know, somebody famous. And let's kick it off. Let's start it off with the MLB playoffs. Since we haven't had you around so much recently, Nick, why don't you just lead us into maybe let's take a look back. I know you didn't want to take a look back, but why don't we take a look back and then we can take a look ahead at what has happened. So what do you think of the two conference finals?
The DSs.
Well, I was pretty dissatisfied with the way the division series shook out. I know everyone likes the Kansas City Royals as a sort of feel-good story. I understand that, but I kind of felt like the play-in and them making the DS was enough. Kind of get off to the side now, let the big boys play. That's not how it played out.
Nicky all but guaranteed me that the Angels would smash the Royals.
Yeah, we were watching the last game of the season for the Royals, and you're like, oh, it doesn't matter. They're going to get spanked by the Angels.
Baseball,
that,
man.
That was a direct quote. I was slightly inebriated at the time, but I probably would have said it soberly as well. So that was a bit of a shocker. For me, it's a bit of a disappointment because I kind of wanted to see the teams I perceived to be the best clash in that big time World Series, and I think we're not going to have a World Series with those big name teams that have those stars. Like, you're not going to see the Kershaw Mike Trout matchup in LA that you might have wanted to see, things like that.
Well, you've already got a situation where when you look at the four teams left, like, all of their rotations are kind of, you know, there's not a ton of superstar starting pitching going on yet. Mm-hmm. Going on anymore. It's pretty hilarious.
I thought that the Cardinals had a decent chance to take out the Dodgers, but I definitely would have picked all other three teams that lost pretty heavily. Yeah. Like, that was big on the Angels. Baltimore is a better team than people give them credit for. I think that them being an underdog has kind of been overplayed. They were a better team than Detroit through the vast majority of the regular season. Yes, Detroit had those big three aces.
Yeah.
And people, I had someone come up to me like, oh, Detroit sweep, Scherzer, Verlander, Price. That's a sweep. And it's like, it doesn't quite work like that. Just because you have the better pitcher, as we've seen, that doesn't mean you're going to necessarily win the game.
Look at the Nats Giants, too. Like, yeah. I thought the Nats were going to crush for a similar reason. I thought that the guys that they were going to trot out to start, you know, the first three games of the series were going to be awesome. And
I mean, I don't tend to believe in magic and all this stuff with guys who are crazy good in the postseason, guys who aren't, but for whatever reason, Ryan Vogelsong.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Every time. I'm so
happy you said that.
Like, I don't know the deal with Ryan Vogelsong, but it just is. It is what it is.
Yeah,
the site that I'm looking at right now, this is a hilarious stat. Vogelsong's 1.19 ERA is the third best in postseason history among those with at least 5 starts, trailing only Sandy Koufax and Christy Mathewson.
This is a guy who, like, was out of the major leagues for a pretty large chunk of time because he wasn't good enough to be on the Pirates before the Pirates started being in the playoff hunt. So he's kind of, I wouldn't say he's a nothing pitcher. He's a perfectly fine pitcher, but for whatever reason,
the playoffs bring out the best in him.
He's just come up huge for the Giants. So, yeah, there are reasons for me as a baseball fan to be disappointed with the way it's played out. That being said, just because the teams you don't want to aren't in there, it doesn't mean these series might be very tight. You might see, like, I'd love to see a game seven. We didn't see any game fives, which is pretty unusual. And I think that you got some pretty evenly matched teams. So we're going to, looking ahead, that KC-Baltimore matchup, everyone wants to play that as power versus speed. Mm-hmm. There's some truth to that. I think, to be honest, these teams are more similar than people think.
Yeah, I think so too.
The run prevention is great, but it's largely through defense.
Yeah.
Neither rotation is a complete all-star rotation. James Shields, you could maybe call an ace. I think he's a bit of a fringe ace in my book.
Yeah, maybe a two, like a really good two.
Yeah, so he's maybe probably the big, like Tillman is the Baltimore ace.
Those two teams' rotations are insane. Like they, you look at both of those rotations, and like if you were just blankly given those like five starters, you'd be like, neither of those teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah,
like it's bizarre how good they are, and it's as you said, it's all defense, I guess.
All defense from run prevention point of view, and then Baltimore, they've got power. They hit them out. I mean, no Chris Davis. That's the news. He's not going to be on the roster.
Yeah.
But they still have guys. They've got Jones. They've got Pierce.
Cruz,
of course.
Yeah.
Who can put it out. But I think that it's not as much of a David Goliath as people present it as, maybe because you've got very similar defense and pitching on both sides, and Baltimore does have the power. KC's got the speed. And without Matt Wieters, who's been gone for most of the year, I think if the Orioles had Matt Wieters, that might make a big difference in this series in terms of slowing the running game. But they don't. They're stuck with Nick Hundley, who's kind of okay at gunning out base runners, but nothing special.
Yeah. So who you got winning that series?
I will take Baltimore in – I'll say seven. I'll say Baltimore in seven. I think that the teams are fairly evenly matched. I think Baltimore is a better team. Baltimore might be the best team left in the playoffs. I just think that they are kind of criminally underappreciated for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Just because of these aces that Detroit had, everyone never really gave them a chance. But now, especially with the Angels going out, if I would have had the Angels against the Orioles to win, but now the Angels are out, I don't see any reason why they can't be in the World Series.
I think I got Baltimore winning that in about six, although I will be cheering for Kansas City.
Yeah, I had Baltimore in six in here. But
yeah, I mean, you might as well cheer for Kansas City.
Yeah, why the hell not?
Moving over to the NLCS. So we get the teams you have seemingly every year.
I know. Yeah. I can't stand it.
Which is funny. It's kind of ridiculous. And it's not even necessarily the same cast. When you think of San Francisco, you think of that Lincecum, Kane, Bumgarner three, and that's not what's going on right now. I mean, Ryan Vogelson, obviously a constant playoff staple. But
just a champion.
Ace, playoff ace.
Buster. Like, this team just greasily scrapes in the runs, wild pitches. Yeah,
that was awful.
That was so bad.
Elimination game against the Nationals where Bryce Harper put up this huge effort, one-man band, and then the Giants just got across enough runs.
That was so bad.
Every time I look at the Giants on paper, Bumgarner's a legitimate ace.
He's awesome.
He's a bit underappreciated.
Yeah.
But every time I look at them on paper, I generally tend to like the other team, but they've got a couple of rings with, at least in terms of the lineup, largely similar guys.
Yeah.
Wasn't Scudero a World Series MVP once?
Scudero?
Did I make that up?
MVP?
MVP. He was a hero.
I know he was a hero. I don't know. I can look that up.
Well, whatever.
You got the Google machine with us.
I mean, what I was trying to say was he was a huge stud for the Giants in the playoffs, which is hilarious.
Edgar Renteria had that World Series winning hit.
Yeah. They go through, like, I don't know, their offense somehow.
Scudero was named the most valuable player of the 2012.
Boom. Nice. That's real.
Those dropping real knowledge facts on you.
Marco Scudero, poor man's David Eckstein.
Most valuable player of the 2012 National League Championships.
Ooh, boom.
Sorry.
Oh, man. That was risky. You went for a risky, call.
After the show, gonna, you can vote me off.
We're also going to have to, sign a – you're going to have to do another show after this talking about how you apologize for giving everyone – all the Pineheads the wrong information.
Sorry,
about
Pineheads.
Marco Scudero.
If I'm a Cardinals fan right now, I'm pretty worried about Andrew Wainwright and what's going on with that.
Adam.
That's the one. I don't know where the Andrew came from. So we're all over the place here early on. Going to have to cool things down. But yeah, I'm a bit concerned about that elbow. And I mean, he will pitch, but how well will he pitch? You're looking at potentially, if you had a seven-game series, maybe pushing your ace, quote-unquote, to three games in that series. And then it looks like there's no way Wainwright can do three. Hopefully he can give them two. It's kind of unclear at this point. I mean, he will. You'll see him tonight, and that'll give you an idea.
Yeah. So who
do you have?
I mean, I guess I'm going to go with the Cardinals because I think that's the logical answer. I think they are a better team. I think they've got a better lineup. I think the pitching for both teams is actually fairly similar. Maybe the Cardinals play a little bit better defense. So I think the Cardinals are the better team. We've seen the better team doesn't always win. A 7-game series makes it more likely the better team win. Yeah. I'll take the Cardinals in 6.
Cool. I think I'm going through like no real logic. I'm just going to pick the Giants just because I think that's going to be one of those weird series where they win a couple dirty, greasy games again. And, you know, I'm just saying they win in 2010, they win in 2012, they win in 2014. They take a year off in between and then just, you know, keep being beauties.
Yeah. I'll one-up you and go Cardinals in 5.
Okay.
Because I don't think that the Giants can maintain this.
They're definitely not going to get in 2016.
Yeah.
Don't feel good about that.
What do you think about do you think people are going to watch this as much as they would, like, had the teams that everyone expected to go that far?
Well, if you look at the markets, the big markets aren't there, right? You don't have a New York. The Yankees, whatever you think of the Yankees, and we got a diversity of views on the Yankees on this podcast, they draw, right? People tune in to watch the Yankees, like them or hate them.
To either, to cheer them
the
on
the
Dodgers,
or to hate watch them. Especially these now new kind of big money Dodgers of the last 3 or 4 years, people want to watch that team. I mean, the Orioles are a feel-good story, but I think a feel-good story, they'll draw baseball fans, but I don't think they draw the casual sports fan. Mm-hmm. I don't think the casual sports fan really cares about Baltimore versus Kansas City. St. Louis and the Giants, maybe a little better.
I think the Giants are like a marquee-ish franchise.
They kind of have that whole like Bay Area plus like Oregon kind of area.
Yeah, and I mean some Giants fans from when they were in New York still like the old guys cheer for San Francisco now. So maybe I don't know.
There's a little bit to that, and I think also St. Louis again, but. All of my logic comes from the position of being a baseball fan. As a baseball fan, I love to watch St. Louis because that team is just stupidly well run.
Oh, like, it's just amazing.
It's not fair. Almost. Yeah. Like, they're, I don't know, to make a comparison, it's like the Spurs of the MLB.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
they, Butch Carter-ism right there.
Yeah, there you go. So, as a baseball fan, I just have so much respect for the Cardinals that when the Cardinals are on, I like to watch them. But again, St. Louis isn't a huge market. It's kind of in the middle of the states. So, yeah, I think that you're going to see maybe a decline in people watching this year.
Now, what about if it's a St. Louis, Kansas City, Missouri? Lots of news coming out of Missouri, you know, across the board. Do you think that maybe that would garner a lot of interest? All the protests going on outside, that crazy video from Deadspin coming out, with all the crazy racism coming out of Cardinals fans. Do you think anything maybe that'll go along to mainstream news, maybe get some different viewers in the process? If that's the case, come a World Series with those two teams, Battle of Missouri.
If that happened, I think Missouri would be insane.
Yeah.
I would love to spend some time in that area when that was going on. I don't know if that part of the country can really garner the interest from the, like, it's the left and right coast in the states and it's the flyover states. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
Maybe with the exception of Chicago.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the New York viewer or the LA viewer is going to be totally sucked into something like that. Though I do think there'll be some great stories that would arise if that were to happen. That's probably the result I would be cheering for, as it were. But I don't know if that's going to light a fire. Like, for the biggest World Series in my memory, and obviously there's going to be bigger ones in terms of that the kind of regional storyline drawing the country in, was that Subway Series.
Yeah, the Subway Series, definitely.
2000 with the Mets and the Yankees. I think if the Dodgers and the Angels had played, there would have been some of that going on, but I don't think this Missouri series potentially can bring in that kind of interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we just got something we're going to do, as we always do on the podcast. We're going to give you guys a bit of a power ranking.
Power ranking.
All right. And nice work.
Thank you.
This week, we're power ranking classic board games.
Classic.
And so the 5 we're going to be choosing from are, in no particular order, Snakes and Ladders, Clue, Risk, Scrabble, and Monopoly. Once again, I said no particular order because I don't want to give away my order. Let's start with Nick, who said that he might have an unpopular opinion this time around.
Yeah, I suspect that I'm going to be the Brett of the show on this one. Although I think that everyone might be a little
bit different.
I think so too.
There
is really consensus on something like this.
People are very, you know, polarized with their views on some board games.
And I think there's kind of some traumatic and or glorious childhood moments that relate to how you rank these type of things. So I think I'm going to get a reaction right away with my number five, which is going to be Risk.
Okay.
I know a lot of people absolutely love Risk. Those people who know me know that I love strategy. I love strategy games.
I know that you love strategy. You love strategy so much.
I'm a very analytical thinker, and that doesn't necessarily relate to only numbers. That's kind of the commonplace association nowadays. But with Risk, I find it so frustrating because I can cook up a strategy that is just a 95% winner, and then someone just rolls a bunch of sixes, and then you're out of the game, and you have to watch other people play for like 3 hours. I've conquered the world before in Risk. It's very rewarding. It feels great, but I just think the dice play more of a role in that I'm comfortable with in a game that you can't help but take seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
So when things,
world domination at its, you know,
that's smallest. The definition of serious. Yeah. World domination.
Yeah, so I'm always taking it seriously, and I feel like I'm too much at the mercy of the dice, and that's why I put it number five.
All right.
Number four is Snakes and Ladders. This one, again, you're 100% at the mercy of the dice, but you don't take it seriously because it's Snakes and Ladders. Yeah. So it's hard to get too worked up about it, so it's easier for you to be at peace with what happens in a game of Snakes and Ladders. Mm-hmm. Unless you're sort of six, which is most people playing, in which case everything is a disaster or the best thing that's ever happened. Number three, I have Clue. I really like Clue. I actually recently played Clue for the first time in maybe a decade, a month ago or so, and it kind of brought me back. And again, so many great childhood memories. Rainy days at the cottage.
Clue was
the game. So I like Clue, the logical aspect. It's really rewarding when you get one and like no one else is even close. And I'm Sherlock Holmes and you guys are all dusters. Anyway, so then number...
I really am Colonel Mustard.
Number two is Monopoly. You got to commit to Monopoly. If everyone buys in and really commits, it's unbelievable how fun it is. Bankrupting another person is just... It's too rewarding. It kind of reveals how bad a person you are. But I know the pitfalls. It can take forever. If anyone isn't committed, then the whole thing can topple. So you just got to have a group of friends or indoor family you can really count on for Monopoly. Yep. But the payoff is huge if you can nail it.
Very true.
And then number one is Scrabble. I'm a words person.
He's a wordsmith.
A wordsmith.
My dad was incredibly good at Scrabble and all kind of words things. And me and him had the rivalry in Scrabble growing up. For years and years and years until classic story, son beats father, and then rivalry turns on its head.
Father disavows son.
Yeah. So it's all a classic tale, and I think that's a lot of my own experience and my own preference. I'm not necessarily saying that Scrabble is the best game, because I know there are a lot of people who don't like it, but it's the best game for this guy.
Sure. Nice.
And for pineheads out there, you know, you should send in your suggestions, because I think Nick Ashmore could run a board game podcast.
No doubt.
From all those beautiful descriptions of all the games. I was pretty impressed there, Nick.
I'm a big board game
guy. All right, moving on to Douglas.
Mine's going to be shorter. Number five for me, Risk, dude. I'm totally with you. It is way too serious anytime I've ever played it. People have just taken it way too seriously, and I haven't really enjoyed myself ever once playing Risk, to be completely honest. Number four, Snakes and Ladders, aka Chutes and Ladders. It's fine. It's pretty easy. Like, you are always playing with like your niece or nephew who's like six or seven, and like it's just kind of, you know, roll. Like, there's no skill or strategy really. You just kind of let it go. Number three for me is Monopoly. In the middle, kind of controversial, I think. But the reason I put it there was all the negatives you said. Like, people have got to be invested, otherwise there's no point. If you're playing with someone who's just like kind of mailing it in, it can't happen. And that's, I've been a part of those type of games far too often. Number two for me, Scrabble. Love Scrabble. I'm not as much of a wordsmith as Nick is, that's for sure. But love me some word games. Love me Boggle too. Boggle, I loved Boggle. Anyway,
Boggle kills me because this is shy. No, don't want to interrupt you too much. As a huge word guy, my girlfriend crushes me at Boggle every time, and I can't explain why. I don't know how it happens every time.
She's, I don't know. I got nothing. Yeah. Boggle natural. That's impressive. Number one for me is Cluedo for all you Brits, you British Pineheads. I love that game, man.
All the Pineheads over the Atlantic.
Across the pond. I've got so many good memories of playing Clue with my family. I remember being six or seven and winning one and thinking I was the smartest kid in the world. Yeah, Clue. Love that game.
All right. We all put Risk at the bottom.
Wow. I'm really surprised by that.
Yeah, you know why? Because I hate that game.
I hate Risk, too.
I think I got on it too late. I think the kids all knew how to play it, and so I got really frustrated when I just, didn't like playing it. It took a really long time. I'd lose right away and watch three other people play. That was a childhood thing, I think. It just kind of scarred me that I couldn't take over the world.
Yeah, I wasn't lying when I said I've never once had a good time playing that game. I hate that game.
I've watched people have a good time, but it doesn't even seem like they're having a good time. They're just kind of bored, rolling dice and hoping they win. Number four, kind of controversial, Monopoly. Ooh, okay. I do not like Monopoly, just above how much I hate Risk, because I'm not the best guy with attention spans, I just can't sit down there for that long to play that game, and I just give up, so it's no fun for anybody else, because then I can have no fun, and they can have no fun, too. Moving on, Snakes and Ladders, number three. That's pretty much just because I hate Risk and Monopoly so much, and I like the other two games more.
Yep.
As you said, same, very basic, very dumb. Mixing it with Shots, though, is fun.
Wow.
Then we got Clue. Clue's a fun game. Clue's just great. A fun game. You know, brings back a lot of memories. And number one, Scrabble. I love Scrabble.
Yeah.
Great game. And, same thing. Childhood, remembering all the two-letter words and, screwing people over with those. Oh, yeah. And, it's always really fun. All right, moving on. Second period. We're going to talk about the NHL. For any of you who tuned in to, if you're in Canada, you probably tuned into Sportsnet on Wednesday and Thursday to watch Canada's game. And, we don't even have our hockey guy here, so we'll try and keep this one short so that we don't say anything too dumb. But the former champs, the LA Kings, on the first night lost 4-0 to the San Jose Sharks, which was surprising. In the fashion in which they did it. And it was, Tommy Wingles, 2 goals.
Boom.
Love that he's on my fantasy team. but this is not a fantasy podcast. No, I was just so surprised at how, bad that LA looked. It was more just Quick wasn't there. The third and fourth line on San Jose, which has never really been something to be too crazy about, were doing really well against LA, who is known for their depth. They just didn't look all there, and it's really odd to see that from such a team that just kind of blew everybody away in the playoffs. But that is LA. That's kind of what they do. That's their thing.
Yeah.
They're going to be a completely different team come the end of the season. God knows why. But I just don't understand the reason for that. Mind you, it could be a Boston Red Sox kind of thing. Just
maybe.
First to worst.
It was bizarre seeing it because, you remember when these teams last played, when the Sharks last played the Kings, it was after the Sharks had blown that 3-0 lead in the playoffs, and after they got booed off their home ice after they were going down and thanking the crowd and stuff, and they were booed mercilessly. And all of a sudden they came back and played well. You don't want to make huge sweeping proclamations off one game, obviously. But I'm with you in that it was surprising to see a team that, the Sharks, people say the Sharks could be a early losing streak away from just blowing up their entire team and just kind of trading everybody and hitting the reset button. So it was kind of surprising to see them come out and play pretty well. As you said, it wasn't necessarily the big name guys. It wasn't that for the
Marlowe
first line.
Marlowe did pretty well.
No, Marlowe did well for sure, but it wasn't that whole line doing it.
Yeah.
As you said, it was a lot of the depth. The Sharks, they make the playoffs every year. They're going to be a good team.
Contenders, the best season playing team.
Yeah, regular season playing team for sure. Teams. They're like the Peyton Manning of the NHL.
Yeah.
Unreal in the regular season.
Yeah, I think maybe, now that you mentioned it, they could have come back with a bit of a fire under their tush from having such a, I said tush.
you might have to bleep that one out.
Yeah, from being so humiliated by LA just 3 months prior, 4 months, 5, 6 months, whatever
it was.
But yeah, I do agree. I do still think it's strange that LA looks so poor. We'll see how they do over the next week or so. Should we move on to the Avs?
This is the one that I wanted to talk about the most.
The Avs, if anyone tuned in last night, looked just horrendous.
Terrible. 5-0 loss at Minnesota. And like it could have been way more. And this is an interesting one because this is you know, hockey's moving into all this analytics stuff and all this puck possession stuff, and the Avs play that style of play that really a lot of the kind of analytic guys hate because it's not puck possession. It's, you know, and they were super successful last year, obviously. Well, this was what happens when, you know, it looked like the analytics guys were proved right, because the Avs were outshot 48-16. And, like, listen to this period by period. First period, outshot 17-5. Second period, outshot 21-8. Third period, when the Wild just shut it down, outshot 10-3. This, I know I said earlier we don't want to make sweeping proclamations after one game, and I'm not going to totally do that, but you might have, you know, everyone's expected some regression from Colorado, but that was an awful showing. And, like, if they're going to be so, again, play the same style and not really focus on puck possession and not really focus on, you know, controlling the play, it could be problematic. They could fall maybe not totally out of the playoffs, but definitely into, like, the bottom half of it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think it's totally fair to talk about this game without mentioning what the Minnesota Wild did.
Yeah, as much as, so
if you talk about these analytics guys, as much as they liked or disliked, rather, Colorado coming to the year, Minnesota was a team that a lot of people had rising in the standing. So I think that you're seeing two teams potentially going in different directions. And, yeah, it's hard to be totally alarmed after one game, but, yeah, you can't have made a worse start than Colorado did.
No.
On the other hand, Minnesota were great out of the gate too. So it's going both ways. It's not 100% what Colorado is failing to do. It's also Minnesota succeeding in doing. But yeah, these will be two teams that will be interesting to compare a couple months from now.
Yeah, I think so. Like, they kind of did exactly the opposite. Like, I know this is one game again, but going into the 2013-2014 season, Minnesota was going to just fly and just be amazing, and they were underwhelming at best. And before last season, everyone thought Colorado was just going to go right to the bottom, and they completely switched positions. And now this game kind of showed you that maybe Minnesota actually is starting to figure out this dynamic and all that money that they put into these players. Varlamov had 33 saves in two periods.
Yeah, I know. Like, so gross.
Like, that's, I don't know, 33 on 38 isn't like, you know, it's five goals, yes, but, you know, he shouldn't be facing that kind of thing, especially with a team that was so solid, like, and, you know, Tyson Barrie getting me a -3 in my fantasy.
Man.
Garbage.
I pushed for you to draft Barrie. He'll
it's okay. He'll pick it up.
He'll come around.
If Colorado manages to pick it up. But last but definitely not least, Toronto Maple Leafs fans were given a taste of what they're kind of used to on Wednesday night.
That was literally the perfect way for a Leaf season to start.
I know. Jeez.
Like, getting that late goal. Boys are pumped. Shanny's sitting in the press box, like, all jacked up. And, yeah, under a minute left. Obviously, they lose. I mean, like...
Yeah.
So
rapidly.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what to say. I'm not going to, like, dissect it too much. I just, like, when they scored, I at no point was like, oh, man, the Leafs might actually win this. I was just like, oh, okay, well, so they've just kind of made it more painful for themselves.
That was the general reaction of the place I was at, too. It was like, it wasn't even like, you know, people were, like, throwing things across or anything like that. They just...
It's back, man. NHL season's back. Leafs fans, you got that feeling all over again, and it might last all season again.
That being said, Toronto's had Montreal's number over the last couple of years.
The last four home openers, we've beaten them.
Despite the fact that Montreal's been a better team, but Montreal keeps getting better and better. Toronto's getting maybe tiny bit better, but not really. So I think that rivalry to watch over the course of the year, you could see the Montreal Canadiens just lay a hurt on the Leafs. And it's probably they should have been laying a hurt on the Leafs the last few years, but this year could really be the year where they
I mean,
lay them out.
To the Leafs, I guess they did play pretty well in the first and second.
They played super well in the first.
Yeah, the first we were fast. I can't say we, but I was really impressed by like the work from Stuart Percy and Brandon Cozen.
Yeah, some of you guys were actually really good.
Yeah, I was kind of once again underwhelmed by the one big line that should have been putting out. But
and
I mean,
Bernier
you know,
great.
One game, but they, I mean, their schedule does not look easy over the first month. It actually looks quite hard. So I don't know what's going to happen. I do agree with you that Montreal could lay a hurting on the Leafs this year. We'll just wait and see. All you Toronto Pineheads, I know most of you Pineheads are from Toronto. Don't just, you know, hang up the old shoes just yet. And don't stop listening to us because, well, you know, I'll
never
talk about
stop.
The Leafs and talk about be
a
fanboy.
Phil Kessel's actually hurt, in which case hang it up.
Yeah.
The season's over because he didn't look right and we don't know exactly what his injury was and he could be playing with something, and if he is, that could be a huge problem.
We're scheduled to have someone coming in right now.
I'm going to take that miss on that one.
Okay.
I've been sitting here in the booth for a while now, drank a lot of juice this morning, and nature's calling in a big way. I don't really have faith that you guys got a decent guest, so I don't really think that it's going to be much of an issue.
Okay.
Here,
man.
Well,
whatever.
I mean, you miss like so many weeks, and you just leave us like that. All right, so now that Nick's gone, we actually have the honor in studio. This was a huge get. Simon and I worked, you know, months to get this.
Amazing.
Luckily, he now has the time to come in and do whatever we want. Clayton Kershaw, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us, Clayton.
Clayton, nice to see you.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan since episode one, and so it's just great to be on here. It's good to be in a media environment where I can trust that I've had a lot of tough questions thrown at me and a lot of accusations. So just coming into a comfortable studio environment with some people that whose work I really respect.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us. It means a lot to us.
Yeah. I mean, we're just students. We're just a little guy, just like you.
I'm going to kick things off. First question, and I'm just going to be blunt. Why can't you get it done when the pressure is on?
I'd like to direct that question to Don Mattingly because I'm going to say a couple things to you. Game one, six innings, killing it. Two outs in the sixth inning, give up a home run to a left-handed hitter. That never happens.
Yeah, I know.
Might be a sign. Maybe I'm getting tired. Maybe you should think about putting someone in the next inning. Next inning, giving up some hits. You know, I gave up four hits in a row. That never happens. But you know what? They thought, hey, let's leave him in. Matt Carpenter's coming to the plate. That guy's a scrub.
He's
not one of the best players in the league. Double. Lead's gone. So you know what? I keep pitching because that's literally my contract. I'm not allowed to walk off the mound. Like I signed a contract that said, when the manager decides you're on the mound, you got to pitch.
Right.
And I respect that contract. But I'm saying you can't blame me when I'm doing something that it's not working out clearly, but they're just making me keep doing it. You know what? Like, that's what they say. Definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting the same result. When I give up that many hits in a row, get me out of the game. Second game I was in. 3 days of rest, okay? When pitchers have 3 days of rest, I don't know how much you guys know about the ins and outs of what it is to be a pitcher. It's not so good. Doesn't feel good.
I've always felt like you want more rest than less rest.
Four days is great. 5 days, it's actually, studies have been shown, even better.
Okay.
Wow.
Busting out studies.
Studies. Yeah. Studies. The book, Tom Tango. I'm a big fan. And so, get through six innings. Killing it.
Yeah.
Approaching 100 pitches. 3 days rest.
Yeah.
Things start going a little sideways. Couple men on base. Matt Adams, pretty good hitter at the plate.
Guy hits yams.
Yeah. Hits home runs. That's kind of what they pay him to do. I've been throwing a few pitches, okay? I was doing perfectly before. Six good innings. We got a lead. You know what I mean? Six innings, 3 days of rest. We got a lead.
That's
I shut him down.
Yeah.
What else do you want? So they leave me in. Again, it's in my contract. I did what I had to do. Yep. Events transpired.
They did.
And it didn't work out.
Events really did transpire.
You know what? Like, I I'm part of a team. I'm part of a bigger machine. Sometimes you can isolate where the problem was. I'm telling you that it was 100% Don Mattingly. Okay. There's maybe some people who might tell you that I played a part in that, but I personally don't agree with that.
Now, what if what if you were sitting across from Don Mattingly right now? Say I'm him. What do you ask me?
I'd ask you if you were sort of familiar with baseball, like if you'd...
Wait, are you aware that his last name is unofficially baseball? He is Donnie Baseball.
Well, that is something that I've heard before, but sometimes people lie. Like people have padded their resume before, so maybe when he was getting this job that maybe he was a little unqualified for, maybe. Sure. Again, I'm not in those meetings. There's another meeting I'm not in. Yeah. Where they picked the manager. I had no part in picking the manager. And so I'd say, you know what? A lot of people change careers nowadays. Most people don't stay in one career their whole life. So maybe it's time for you to find something that kind of suits your skills a little better. I heard there's some growth industry. The financial sector is really good right now. Engineering. If you go and get an engineering undergrad, you're almost sure to get a six-figure job within sort of 5 to 10 years of graduation. I know he's got the money saved up to do it. Go back to school, get a degree.
I don't know, but by his recent decision-making, I don't know if that's the best job to go into.
I didn't say go to a good school. Try Trent.
Sure, yeah, okay. Wow, just throwing Trent under the bus. Resetting Riding the Pine, we've got Clayton Kershaw live, and he is just killing Dodger manager Don Baseball.
Headlines.
Oh, God, that was rough, Clayton. So, another question for you. Should you win the MVP? Are you the MVP in the NL?
That's a good question. Yeah, is probably the most basic answer. Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm the best player. Yeah. So it's pretty simple. Like, what is an MVP? It's the best player. Sometimes they're like, oh, you got to lead your team to the playoffs. So I did that. Yep. Like, I don't really know what else you want me to do to be the MVP.
Sure.
I've my charity work has been pretty well renowned. Mm. Like, people think of me as a pretty good guy.
You were childhood friends with Matt Stafford. That's huge.
Yeah. I mean, that guy is a beauty and one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Sure.
I'm not a big football fan. I don't really know, but I think he's probably one of the best. And so, like, what else do you want me to do, really? Like, I got some numbers for you. I'm a bit of a number guy. 2013, I come out, 183 RA. People are like, oh, man, you can't do that again. This is like the goddamn modern era. 2014, come out, ERA 177. And I'm like, I did it again, okay? I proved myself. You didn't give me MVP in 2013. Did the exact same thing. Struck out 10.85 batters per 9 innings. Ugh. Yeah, it's the age of the strikeout. No one's doing that.
No.
This guy's doing it.
Yeah.
So again, it's hard to talk all these things without sounding like you're pumping your own tires. And I'm really sorry if the Pineheads get that impression that I feel like I need to lobby for myself. But really, I'm just presenting you with facts. Everything I've said to you today has just been a fact.
Yeah. You know what? You're awesome.
Clayton Kershaw, speaking the truth on the Riding the Pine podcast. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks so much,
Mr.
Clayton.
Kershaw.
Literally anytime.
All right. Anytime. And you heard that here on the RTP. I wish Nick was here. He's a baseball fan.
You would have loved
that. Oh, there he is. That. Nick.
Nicky Smash.
Nick, did you pass?
I may have bent the truth a little when I said what I was going to do. but yeah, so I hope you guys did your little segment, whatever it was, and
it was pretty bush league.
Yeah, I mean, Clayton Kershaw did come into studio.
Yeah, well, that guy's got like a 5.12 ERA in this playoffs in his career, so like it's a pretty big duster.
Oh, man.
All right, moving on to the NFL. Week 6, kind of looking pretty.
It doesn't look great.
Blah. couple games that I really don't want to watch. Jacksonville at Tennessee. But there's two that we've kind of pointed out as our, quote, marquee matchups for the week, as marquee as they could be. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys at the Seattle Seahawks. Why don't we start with Seattle Seahawks fan Nick Ashmore?
Well, I think it's
Clayton
been
Kershaw
made pretty clear before that I'm someone who doesn't think with my heart too much. People have argued about whether I have a soul or those kind of things. That's been thrown around.
Sure.
But I do have a big time sports gut when it comes to Seattle Seahawks. It's a team that's most in tune with my kind of intuition side. Wow. And I feel kind of bad about this game. I know the Seahawks probably win. But I think it's going to be really close. And if the Cowboys won, I wouldn't be shocked.
Wow.
The Seahawks defense, everyone talks about, it's great, especially at home.
Mm-hmm.
But the running defense isn't potentially as good as it used to be since the loss of Red Bryant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that Cowboys offensive line. Yeah, so I think they can run the ball on anyone. And
I think it's the best in football.
Once you can really run the ball effectively, basically at will, which they've done against almost everyone they've played, it's really tough to win. Your offense doesn't get the ball. They can shorten the game if they get the lead. So I'm not saying outright that Dallas is going to win, but I'm saying I've got a bit of a bad feeling about this as a Seahawks fan, and I think Dallas has a better chance than some people are giving them credit for.
I totally agree with you in terms of this. This is as good of a matchup as a team can have going into Seattle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Dallas has, if anyone's going to feel good about themselves going into Seattle, which like no one really should because it's just a terrifying place to play, it would be Dallas because of exactly what you said. They've got one of, if not the best O-lines in football. They've game planned this year the whole time
to
really pound the ball, DeMarco. And the Seahawks run defense, you know, isn't as good as it has been the last couple years. I still think Seattle wins, but I totally am with you in that, you know, I think it's going to be closer than a lot of people think. And if Dallas can consistently run the ball and kind of limit some possessions for, this sounds like so many NFL buzzwords, but it's true. If they can kind of limit possessions for Seattle and really kind of control the game with the run game, I think it'll be close, but I still got Seattle winning, yeah.
Cowboys in OT.
Whoa! Wow. Interesting. I mean, it'd be interesting if that goes the opposite of Seattle's way. Cowboys get the coin flip. Yeah. Romo marches the field. And I said last time I'm comfortable with the rule. I mean, please ask me again if Seahawks win. But hopefully I can stick to my integrity. I also think one of the things that's really interesting about the Cowboys season, I think we all knew DeMarco Murray was a really talented back. I think we all knew that offensive line was very talented. Yep. Last year, their defense was historically bad. They didn't appear to make many significant upgrades.
They lost people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could have made an argument that this was going to be worse.
Oh, yeah. Sean Lee before the season, like out for the year, everyone was kind of saying
they're done. I love Sean Lee when he plays, but he never plays. No. So that defense, it's not like they've been fantastic, but they've been an NFL defense, and that's been a huge surprise. So it's going to be interesting to see what this defense does against a Seattle offense. It's pretty hard to scheme against sometimes.
Yeah, very hard to scheme against, yeah.
Does DeMarco stay healthy for the entire season?
No, he'll miss a game or two.
He'll miss a game?
Yeah.
Does he shatter records as ESPN football is saying that he will?
No. He's going to be a really good running back, I think, all year, and I think he'll play like 13, 14 games. But, so many people get nicked up and miss one. If you're playing a Sunday night or do a Thursday, I don't know the Dallas schedule, but if you're playing a Thursday night or he's a little banged up, maybe you rest him, he'll miss a game or two.
Yeah, he'll get some kind of minor low ankle sprain or turf toe or something like that. And, he's shown also that he's not the most durable back, and backs are never a good bet to play the whole season. I don't think he's going to set any records. This is just so much of a passing league right now. It's not the same landscape where people are setting records.
He's good, though.
Moving on to Patriots-Bills.
I would love it if Brett was here because I think he was sipping the whole Patriots are back Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
The Patriots are the better team. It's in Buffalo, which I guess I've been to a bunch of Bills games. I guess it's a home field advantage. The people love the Bills in old Western New York. Mm-hmm. I think New England wins this game, and mainly it's because Kyle Orton is the starting quarterback for Buffalo.
Yep.
I can't get behind a team who's starting Kyle Orton.
I have picked Buffalo in this game.
Yeah,
You're the best.
I don't think the Patriots are all the way back. They played that.
I don't think they are either.
They played that one game against Cincinnati. We talked a lot about Cincinnati. That makes us look a little ugly. Some of the things the Patriots did to Cincinnati.
RTP's
it's the same
team
that also got crushed by the Chiefs. I still think this offense is really easy to plan against. I don't think Gronk is back, and I do think the Bills have a defense that is a little bit underappreciated. So if the defense can go with a big game, Orton takes care of the ball, I think they could win in a close, low-scoring game.
I'm going Patriots as well. Just
I don't think it'll be a blowout because I don't think the Patriots have enough to blow out teams, like other than last week. But like I don't think that consistently will blow out teams. But man, Kyle Orton, and I love Purdue, but
yeah, and I also don't really like this week's matchups in general.
No, it's not a great week.
This was a bit of a reach, the New England Buffalo. That being said, I did pick Buffalo. Their run defense is really good.
You definitely made the podcast more exciting. Yeah,
I got the two Williamses on D who are beasts.
We got lock of the week. Let's do it real quick.
Yeah.
Simon, let's hear it.
Okay. First off, this isn't my pick right away, but if there was ever a week to pick Jacksonville, this would be the week. They're +5 at Tennessee. I think Tennessee is in a free fall.
Yeah.
I think that Charlie Whitehurst is terrible.
Storm Johnson.
Yeah. They're not my lock of the week.
Yeah.
They're not my lock of the week.
N-O-T.
But if there was ever a week to pick the Jags, it was this week. My lock of the week is Green Bay -3 at Miami. Miami doesn't even have a home field advantage. Like, those fans are really not good. Green Bay, the offense looked good. I'm taking
– I saw a line this week, like earlier this week. It was -150 on Green Bay winning straight up.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's bizarre.
That's gross. Like, that's obviously. Okay, I'm going to pick my lock of the week. I believe it's -7, San Diego over Oakland in Oakland. I don't like the Raiders.
They're terrible.
The black hole, though. Yeah. That could be a huge factor. Oh, yeah, San Diego's sick. Oakland's dusty. My lock of the week is Arizona hosting the Redskins. Somehow the line is 3.5.
I even saw it at 2.5.
Let me check what I got right here. Arizona is a really good team. Washington Redskins are bad.
Really
Kirk
bad.
Kirk Cousins is dusty.
Yeah, I have three.
-3. Okay. Yeah. So I would take that lock at 6. Like, I don't know. I just don't understand where this line is coming from. I'm sure there's some QB uncertainty in Arizona, but I think they're going to destroy the Redskins.
You heard it here first. If you can get that number anywhere below 6, take
it. All right. That's all we have for you today on Riding the Pine Podcast. I'm Trevor Loudon, joined by Simon Dougalis. His Twitter is @Dougalis.
Yeah, @Dougalis, D-A-U-G-U-L-I-S. Happy Canadian Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving, everybody. Columbus Day for all those who like to...
Because that guy was an awesome dude.
Yeah, he was a really good dude.
Columbus.
Yeah, just wiped out an entire nation's worth of people.
Also thought it was India.
Yeah. And Nick, you can follow him at...
Nick_Ashbourne. Couldn't get my name. Someone else had it.
All right. That's all we have. His avatar is a picture of Dr. Nick. All right, that's all. Tune in next week. RTP, you know, we don't have many episodes left coming from the Centennial Studios, so we might be doing it in someone's basement.
Might be mine. Don't worry, Pineheads. We'll still get it to you.
All right, we're done. We're through.